Women have come a long way in the workplace. In a little over three decades, thousands of women have achieved much in corporate America. The reasons why women have reached the top executive level are many and varied, but there are a few things that all successful business people have in common. At the top of the list, hard work, persistence, and excellent leadership skills. And the women who have become successful in today's business world have something else in common. They have an executive presence. Their images communicate authority. Barbara Pachter, president of Pachter & Associates, is an internationally renowned business etiquette trainer, coach, author, and keynote speaker. She is the author of several highly acclaimed business books, including New Rules at Work, 79 Etiquette Tips, Tools and Techniques to Get Ahead and Stay Ahead, and When the Little Things Count, and They Always Count. Pachter is considered a leading authority on women's issues. For over 15 years, she has been giving women's seminars to professional women throughout the United States and abroad, and had the extraordinary experience to present her Women in the Business World seminar to women in Kuwait. She has appeared on ABC's 2020, The Weekend Today Show, and CNN's Anderson Cooper Show, and her advice has been featured in dozens of publications, including Time Magazine, The New York Times, USA Today, Working Mother, and the Harvard Business Review. Her client list boasts many of today's most notable organizations, including Microsoft, Chrysler, Citigroup, NASA, Pfizer, and Cisco Systems. Based on Pachter's extensive experience in the executive world, she has identified the areas where women need to enhance their image. She has created an 8-step plan to help you develop your executive presence. These steps will help ensure that you are taken seriously in the business world. And now, Barbara Pachter and Executive Presence for Women.
What exactly is an executive presence? I begin many of the dozens of women's seminars I conduct each year by asking that question. I ask the women in attendance to describe someone they know or have seen who they believe has executive presence. That's the quality that encompasses, among other things, the key traits of leadership, credibility, and confidence. More often than not, they describe the president or CEO of the company they work for. Sometimes they describe personalities like Donald Trump, Warren Buffett, or Bill Gates. They use phrases like, when he walks into the room and everyone falls silent, or he walks like he owns the hallway. More often than not, the women in my seminars describe men. I believe this is true partly because men still hold more powerful corporate executive positions than women. Yes, thankfully today, there are women who are CEOs in major corporations, like Irene Rosenfeld of Kraft Foods and Christina Gold of Western Union. But many women, on their way up within their own corporate structures, still lack sufficient role models to emulate. They have a harder time casting that critical executive image because they are often not sure exactly what they are supposed to look and act like. Very few are taught how to develop a winning professional image in business school. Many are left guessing. If you look to the media for guidance, you will find the Hollywood version of powerful women. Though they may be portrayed as intelligent on shows like CSI, these businesswomen are also portrayed as sexy and seductive. Their clothes are tight, their necklines low. These women may win ratings, but they are nothing like the real businesswomen who have blazed trails throughout corporate America. I feel very fortunate to have had strong role models who have helped me nurture my professional development, including what I call my look. My mother took over her father's tool and die business back in a time when a woman was not welcomed in that industry. She successfully ran the business for 15 years and sold it at a profit when she retired. I have also benefited from the experience of my sisters, both accomplished businesswomen. They both have had successful careers, and they have guided me every step of the way. And while working as a trainer for an aerospace company, I was fortunate to have a female boss. She was one of the few women in that industry who had climbed high on the corporate ladder. She was, and still is, a valuable role model for me. It has been through the help of these professional women and the thousands of women who have attended my seminars that I have learned how to establish my own executive presence and define my professional image. Many women in my seminars often comment about my professional appearance and manner. They say, "I want to look like you," or "I wish I could act like you do." Always, there is stunned silence when I tell them, "Well, you can, and you can too." What I mean is not that you are going to, nor should you, look exactly like me or any other professional woman you may choose as a role model. That should never be your goal. Your goal should be, given the right tools, to develop your own look. You want to find the executive image that works best for you. You can learn how to conduct yourself with more confidence and poise. You can learn how to enhance your credibility. You can learn to avoid the mistakes that many women make, both in their dress and in their behavior. It may not be fair that in the office you will be judged on your appearance, but consider this. You too judge others by both their verbal and nonverbal communication. It is part of the way we process information and form impressions. You project an image. Others perceive what you are projecting. You have no control how others perceive you. You only control what you send out. I believe you want to know what that is. And research shows that people will judge you more on your visual appearance than any other aspect of your being. That is why, if you want to be successful, people must notice and respond to you in a positive way. How you package yourself becomes your signature. In effect, it is the image you send out to others. This is what I am going to discuss with you on this recording. I am going to explain the key steps that form your image and how to mold them into an executive presence that works for you. Step one is pretty straightforward. It is to start thinking about your current image. I want you to answer yes, no, or not sure to the following 10 statements. Number one, the overall presentation of my body is positive, meaning that height and weight are generally in proportion. Number two, I stand or think tall. Number three, I have a definite hairstyle. Four, my makeup is appropriate to the situation. Five, I am aware of how I use my hands. Number six, I do not pull on my lower lip, play with my hair or jewelry, tap a pen, over smile, or giggle. Number seven, I know the difference between professional and casual dress. Number eight, I know which colors flatter my appearance. Number nine, I look people in the eye when I speak to them. Number 10, I do not use self-discounting language. These statements span the areas of grooming, clothing, verbal, and nonverbal communication. As you may have guessed, these are the areas involved in developing your executive presence. A word of caution about this self-assessment exercise. This was your assessment of you. Others may see you differently. You need to know if that gap exists. You may have answered yes to questions that in reality reflect areas that need work. There have been women, for example, in my seminars who thought that their makeup was appropriate when it was anything but. I have yet to meet the woman who can wear bright green or blue eyeshadow and look good. If you want the kind of professional image that will benefit your career by increasing your credibility and enhancing your promotability, you have to be willing to go to step two, which is to look at yourself critically. Don't ask a coworker who has a similar look to yours to critique your appearance. She probably is not going to help you. Seek out positive and successful role models through your professional associations or organizations, and you can usually follow their lead. Often, high-level women in your company can be role models too. Or you can hire a coach who will give you feedback. Also, if you look at yourself and something in your appearance causes you to wonder, is this too much? It usually is. This second step in developing an executive presence is crucial. because it will allow you to identify what aspects of your image are working against you, and once you know what they are, you can work to change them. The next or third step is to understand the role and function that your business wardrobe plays. Your clothing is an important part of establishing your image. Some even view it as an extension of your personality. For most men, what makes up an executive wardrobe is still fairly simple and well-defined. A well-tailored suit in a conservative color, or a sport jacket and nice slacks. But a woman's executive wardrobe contains many more choices. And as a result, many women are often uncertain and overwhelmed when putting their clothing together. This is understandable. There is a lot to consider. So, let's get started. There are three important questions you need to ask yourself before choosing your clothing. Number one, is it appropriate? Is it appropriate for my job, my company's dress code policy, or the activity or the event that I am attending? And what's appropriate in a large corporate office may be very different than what's appropriate in a small one. If you are unsure whether your clothing is appropriate or not, don't wear it. The second question is, what is the message that I am sending with my wardrobe? You send a message through your clothing. You want to know what that is. Women confuse feminine with sexy. Feminine is fine in the workplace, sexy is not. Think of the way you dress as falling on a clothing continuum. On one end, you have macho. That's women in three-piece suits and ties. It is not my style, and it may or may not be yours, but it certainly works on some women, and it can look professional. On the other end of the continuum, you have sexy. That is clothing that is too tight, too short, too low, or too much of anything, such as jewelry or makeup. It is not a professional look, nor is it appropriate. If you are wearing a very short skirt or a low-cut top, what's the message that you are sending? In essence, what are you selling? Is it your professionalism or your sexuality? Cleavage is not appropriate in the workplace. Yet, I am amazed at the number of women during my summer workshops wearing inappropriate low-cut tops. Where will people be looking if you are hanging out of your blouse? In the middle of this clothing continuum is where you will find feminine. Feminine is professional, and that is where the executive woman wants to be. This middle area on the continuum allows a lot of room for making statements of individuality and personal style. You can show your figure without flaunting it. You can be up to date with fashion and send the right message about yourself, that you are a professional to be taken seriously. I often take clothes that are sexy and alter them so they fall back into the feminine professional area. Simply by wearing a top under the suit jacket, I do not have to worry about bending over and exposing too much. Sewing the back slit of the skirt just a little means I am no longer exposing a large portion of my leg when I walk. These small alterations make a big difference. Now back to our questions. Before you buy or wear clothing, ask yourself this third question: will it work for me? This means you can break these rules, but you can't break them out of ignorance. And you cannot just tell me that you can break these rules. You need to get feedback from others that you can break a rule and still look professional. I caution women against wearing bright red nail polish. It draws a lot of attention to your hands, and it can convey a party image. Yet, I used to break that rule and wear red polish. I thought it worked for me when presenting seminars. But then I saw myself on TV, and all I saw were flashes of bright red moving back and forth across the screen. It was great feedback for me. I immediately stopped wearing that polish. Now, let's move on to some suggestions to follow as you assemble your executive wardrobe. The first is to buy the most expensive clothing you can afford. What you are buying is quality, and quality usually costs more. In the long run, believe me, it will cost you less. More expensive clothing is generally better made, and as a result, lasts longer and fits better. Think of it this way. You spend most of your time at work. Therefore, most of your clothing budget should go towards buying your work clothes. And remember, when you buy quality, less really is more. It is better to have two good suits than three of lesser quality. European women are famous for this approach. They will spend what you or I might consider a fortune on an outfit, yet they will wear it for 10 years. I once complimented a woman from Switzerland on her leather coat. It was magnificent. She laughed and said she had been wearing it for 9 years. It looked brand new. Another suggestion is to buy classic clothing. If you are going to spend a lot of money on your wardrobe, you do not want it going out of date quickly. Classic clothing is not old fashioned. It simply has a look that never fades. This means you should choose items that are not trendy in terms of color or design. The third suggestion is buy clothes that fit properly. You do not want to wear anything that is too tight. You do not want to overemphasize body parts. A blouse must be able to button and not have the fabric or seams pull. And do not just look at the front of the outfit. You need to check the back also. Choose clothes that flatter you. Women on television or in the movies may have perfect figures, but most real women do not. Don't just buy something because it is in style. It must look good on you also. If you want your clothing to hide some extra pounds, here are some tips. First, solid colors are best. Your shoes and your hose should match. You'll appear thinner and taller when you do. Belts should match your pants or skirt for an unbroken and more flattering line. Next, avoid clothing with wide vertical stripes. Big, bulky clothing will only add pounds to your look, not hide them. And finally, do not buy or wear clothes that are too small to encourage you to lose weight. It might work, but you will not look good wearing them in the meantime. Another suggestion to follow when assembling your executive wardrobe: know your color. This is a critical point. You want to build your wardrobe around one major color. Your clothes, accessories, outerwear, and even your makeup will then be in line with that color. You will need less and therefore have more money to buy quality items. Knowing your color makes the establishment of your wardrobe much easier. My color is black. That means my shoes and handbags are black. All of my accessories are matched to black. I will not buy a navy outfit. If I do, I have to buy navy shoes and other items to go with the blue. That is too much time, energy, and expense for me. Choose your color based on your hair, skin, and eye color. There are generally four choices: black, navy, brown, or gray. For most brunettes, the color is black or navy. For most blondes, the color is navy or gray. For light browns, the color is brown or navy. And redheads usually look best in navy or brown. Though I do believe most everyone can wear black, and of course, there will always be exceptions. You will still coordinate your color with other colors that flatter you. And when you do, you add variety to your wardrobe. Variety can be especially important if you are in the same office every day. Say, for example, if you only wear black, you can get known as the lady in black. Be cautious about wearing bright, bright colors. You can shout, and you have to decide if you want to shout or not. Bright colors do get noticed, but do you want to be remembered for what you said at a meeting or for the bright red plaid you wore? I love this saying: your clothes are shouting, I can't hear you. I'm a tall person. I cannot wear a bright two-piece red suit. I look like a neon sign, though I can and will wear a red jacket with a black skirt. Another point about color: darker colors usually convey a more authoritative image than lighter ones. As you become more comfortable with your wardrobe and have the time, energy, and desire and resources, you can continue to build your wardrobe on a second or third color. The last suggestion is to take good care of your clothes. You are spending good money on your outfits. The last thing you want to do is to jam them into your closet on wire hangers. Have some breathing room between your clothes and use good hangers. Finally, remember this: if you dress like a professional, people are more likely to respond to you as if you are a professional. Now, what exactly are the specific types of clothes and outfits that will convey the right image about you? In answering this question, I'm going to explain the four clothing areas that you are likely to encounter in corporate America today. The first category is professional dress. This includes skirt suits. I start with this item because the skirt suit is still the most powerful look available for women. Your skirt length is very important. A general guideline, no higher than the tip of your knee. The key is you do not want to expose your entire knee. When you do, the knee becomes a visual distraction and draws people's eyes down. Another professional outfit is the pantsuit. This look has really taken over in corporate America. Pantsuits do convey a professional image and work in most situations. A third professional outfit is the two-piece dress. This style of clothing goes in and out of fashion. This look is not considered quite as powerful as the suit, though very appropriate for many situations. A dress without a jacket can be professional, but it usually creates a more casual or dressy look, depending on its fabric and style. Our next clothing area is business casual. Many companies allow employees to dress more casually or more casually on certain days. Unfortunately, many of these companies do not provide specific dress guidelines. As a result, people wear all sorts of things to work, many of them inappropriate. Always remember, business casual is still business. Never dress for work as if you are headed to the beach or a day in the park. Even when casual, your clothing should still communicate your professional attitude. It is hard to be taken seriously when you are wearing shorts or belly shirts to work. But do not think that you can just pretend that your company's casual day is not happening. You do need to participate. Not dressing down, except if you are meeting with a client, will exclude you from the group. But if you have a choice on whether to dress up or down, I advise you to dress more professionally. You will be taken more seriously when you do. A woman in one of my seminars told me that she had been transferred from corporate headquarters to a division of the company that had a business casual dress code. Many people did not know her. Most days, she wore business casual. Occasionally, she wore her business suits. When she did, she noticed that she was treated more professionally by people she encountered throughout her day. She said, "They didn't know me, but I was wearing a suit, so they assumed I was important." If your company does offer guidelines on casual dress, I encourage you to follow them. And here are three more. 1. Women need to wear a second layer. This means a jacket or a sweater set. It will add authority to your outfit. It does not have to be a formal jacket. There are lots of casual jackets that work also. This applies whether it is slacks or a skirt. 2. Men can wear Dockers and a polo shirt and get away with it. On women, it is just not the same look. Women need slacks and shirts. 3. Remember your schedule when planning your outfit. If you are meeting with a client or customer, you usually need to wear professional dress. Here are some suggestions for putting together casual outfits. Try a more casual dress with a jacket, slacks with a shirt or a sweater, or a skirt with a jacket or a blouse. Some of these outfits do not have the second layer that I just mentioned. This is a less commanding look, but young women will often wear it. As you move up the corporate ladder, you will usually want to wear the second layer. Now I'm going to move on to the next area of clothing, evening wear. Depending on your position, you may need to dress up occasionally. It might be the company holiday party or dinner at the boss's home. And this brings me to another important point. Business social events are still business, and your appearance matters. Usually, an evening dress or an evening suit will be appropriate. The basic black dress can work in many situations. Just remember, do not wear anything that is too low, too short, or too tight. Outerwear is our final area of clothing. Depending on where you live, you will need a winter coat, a raincoat, and a good casual jacket. When selecting your outerwear, buy quality. The length of the coat needs to be longer than any skirt or dress you might wear. And finally, buy your outerwear based on your color. Now that I've talked about the major types of clothing you're likely to need in a business environment, what's next? It is step 4, which is to pay attention to the small details, your jewelry, shoes, handbag, briefcase, glasses, and belts. Think of your accessories as your finishing touches. Why spend your valuable time and money assembling a wardrobe only to have your look undone by wearing the wrong accessories? When it comes to jewelry, buy good quality gold, silver, or costume pieces. Follow the rule that less is more. You generally can wear one ring and one bracelet per hand and arm. Any more draws too much attention to these parts of your body. There was a woman in one of my seminars that had a ring on every finger. It was overwhelming and distracting. Also, buy the best watch you can afford. People notice watches. They are easily seen, especially when people gesture, and they can cost anywhere from $25 to $25,000 or more. People will notice your watch. A few young professionals have started using their cell phones to tell time. Most women, though, find it easier to look at a watch instead of digging through a purse to find their cell phone. If you wear both gold and silver jewelry, you can buy a two-tone watch. I bought my watch 17 years ago. My mother advised me to buy a good one, and I did spend a lot of money on it, more than I had planned. Guess what? It still works, it still looks great, and I still get a lot of compliments on it. Earrings are also part of the corporate uniform, but stay away from long hanging ones. They become distracting when they sway. Let's discuss shoes. People also notice shoes. I've had recruiters tell me that shoes are one of the first things they notice about a candidate. I was giving a presentation skills seminar to railroad workers in Western Pennsylvania. They needed these skills when they went into corporate headquarters. Oh, by the way, they were chewing tobacco in my class. First and only time it ever happened. When we started to discuss dressing for a presentation, these men went ballistic about coworkers who come to work with scuffed shoes and worn down heels. They were chewing tobacco and criticizing shoes. People notice shoes. The point is, shoes are an important detail. If your shoes are not well maintained, you can give the impression that you do not pay attention to the details. Shoes should be polished, in good condition, without worn heels. Good leather shoes are preferred. I recommend that you wear no higher than 3.5-inch heels. For most offices, open-toed sandals should be avoided, and no flip-flops, even dress flip-flops. It's work, not the beach. Shoe color should usually be the hemline down. It continues the line. If you choose a contrasting shoe because it is part of the outfit, it may work for you, but remember, it will draw people's eyes down. You also need a good leather handbag and briefcase. Your handbag should match your shoes. Keep them both in good shape and polished. Buy them in your color so they work for all your clothes. Now, what if you wear eyeglasses? You can probably guess by now that I'm going to tell you to buy good quality frames. Don't wear them on a thick chain around your neck, and do not wear dark glasses indoors. People want to see your eyes. A judge instructed a witness in a murder trial to remove his dark glasses so the jury could see his eyes. Be cautious with tinted lenses. If they are too dark, they can stop people from seeing your eyes. Before I talk about the last two areas of accessories, stockings and undergarments, here's a story told to me by a seminar participant. She said that she had gone to the bathroom and had not realized that her skirt had gotten caught in her waistband. I commented, "Yes, that has happened to a lot of women." But she said, that morning when she was putting on her pantyhose, she popped a hole in them. And because the hole was above her hemline, this woman, like most women, decided to get one more wearing out of that pair of pantyhose. Unfortunately for her, the hole revealed most of her right backside. She further explained that when she came out of the bathroom, she went to talk to her boss and stood in his doorway. I interrupted her, trying to make her feel better, and said, "Well, at least you were facing your boss." She replied, "Yes, but my boss's boss's office was directly behind me, and he had a great view of my skirt in my waistband and the hole in my pantyhose." I continued my attempt to make her feel better and said, "Well, at least you had on underwear." "No," she cried, reliving her embarrassment. "No, I didn't." This story reinforces my earlier point to remember to check the front and the back of your outfit. And it's also a great introduction to our discussion on the hot topic of stockings. My position is that stockings provide a cleaner, more polished look. But in today's business casual world, are they always necessary? The answer to that question relies on a woman understanding the importance of projecting a professional image and then determining what is suitable for them and their workplace. Many women have stopped wearing stockings, especially in the summer. But before you burn your pantyhose, I encourage you to consider these 3 points. 1. Remember you are dressing for work. The real question is not stockings or no stockings. The real question is my clothing appropriate for my workplace? Wearing stockings will not fix an outfit that is too tight, too big, too revealing, too short, too casual, too anything. 2. More and more women are wearing pants or pantsuits to the office. As a result, their legs are not exposed, and the question of whether to wear stockings or not becomes moot. And the last point, legs need to be in good condition to pull off not wearing stockings. If your legs have moles, scars, or varicose veins, stockings diminish their appearance. A quick comment about undergarments. They are always a necessity. Make sure your bra fits properly and you don't have any straps showing. And you do not want a visible panty line either. A few moments ago, I described your accessories as your finishing touches. But they are not the only ones. Your hair, makeup, and fingernails are 3 main grooming details that also have a powerful influence on how others perceive you. Let's start with hair. Make sure you have a hair style. You will look more sophisticated when you do. Choose a good hairdresser and update your style every few years. Another point concerns the length of your hair. I know that women are very possessive about their hair, so don't shoot me, but long hair on women, and I mean below the collarbone, is too sexy, too distracting, or too little girlish. If you have long hair and want to keep it, pull it back or put it up. One of my colleagues said that at a meeting, he was driven crazy by a woman that kept twisting a piece of her long hair. He was sure she didn't even know she was doing it. One woman I coached had very long hair. She wore it loose and flowing. She complained that she was not being taken seriously at work, though she always felt effective when dealing with people over the phone. I suggested that she cut her hair. She did, and she noticed that her coworkers and customers treated her more professionally. Makeup is part of the corporate uniform. If you are unsure about what to use or what colors look best on you, go to a professional. Learn which colors work for you and how to apply your makeup to enhance your look, not take away from it. Make sure you tell the makeup artist that you want makeup for business, not an evening out. One director wanted to fine-tune her image as she was working towards her next promotion. Among other things, I suggested that she start wearing makeup, and we discussed what would work for her. She was amazed at the impact that makeup had on her image. Colleagues commented that something was different. She looked more polished. A few months later, I received the call that she had gotten her promotion. Your nails should always be neat and clean. Long nails draw attention to your hands. Very long nails really draw attention to you, and they can bring into question your ability to function properly in the workplace. Nail polish also provides a more finished look. As a general rule, use light colors. French nails also work. Chipped or worn polish does not look professional. And a couple of final grooming tips. Pay attention to your breath. Use mouthwash, and if necessary, refresh your breath during the day. You can use breath strips for convenience, and no gum chewing, please. Clothing is a powerful form of nonverbal communication, but it is not the only one. I was asked to speak to a group of senior women on executive presence, but I wasn't sure that they needed to hear what I had to say. They were a very high-level group. When I got there, they were all dressed beautifully. Then I became really nervous. What could I tell these women? Before I began my talk, they all stood up and introduced themselves. They were dressed like executives, but when they spoke, their nonverbal communication sent a non-executive message. They slurred their words, some clutched their hands, a good number of them spoke softly, slouched, or looked at the floor. I knew my talk would be right on target. Even when you wear the best outfit, if your nonverbal signals are passive, you are taking away from your credibility and professionalism. This brings us to step 5, which is to pay attention to your body language. First, think about how you stand. This is really important for women. Many of us stand passively. We cross our legs, often rest on an ankle, bring our arms in, and take up as little space as possible. I encourage you to stand assertively, with your legs parallel with your shoulders, about 4 to 6 inches apart. Distribute your weight onto both feet. Don't lock your knees. This is not a military stance. Your chin should be up, not way up, but not down either. Your shoulders are back, and unless you're gesturing, your hands remain at your sides. When you stand, think tall. Even if you're not tall, thinking tall will help you give a stronger presence. And speaking of gestures, watch for the pointed finger. This often comes across as aggressive, even if that is not the feeling behind it. And women do not even know they are doing it. I have had women come up to me after seminars and tell me they don't point as they're waving their fingers in my face. Other gestures to watch for are the nervous ones. Do you play with your hands, paper clips, rubber bands, or pens? These mannerisms are distractions, and they can take power away from your words. You are undermining your credibility by appearing nervous. You need to find out what you're doing with your body. Mannerisms appear, and unless we see them or are told about them, they stick with us. When I was pregnant, I gained 50 pounds, so I was huge. And I worked until 3 days before I delivered my son. I found out from feedback that when I was standing up in front of large groups of people, I was scratching my belly, and I didn't know I was doing it. We all need feedback. Watch yourself on tape. You can't eliminate what you don't know you're doing. If you take a good presentation skills class, you will be recorded and receive feedback. Or you can critically evaluate yourself by watching your home movies. Learn what you do or do not do. If I can only say one thing to women after 12 years of conducting women's seminars, it would simply be, speak up. This is the 6th step. Increase your awareness of voice. Learn to use your voice to convey an effective image. Women often speak too softly. This is especially true when they are nervous and they lose even more volume. It's easy for others to tune you out if they have to strain to hear you. Many women don't realize how soft-spoken they are. During seminars, I often find myself having to politely say to a woman, after she makes a comment, "We can hear you." For some of these women, when they raise their volume, they feel as if they are shouting. They are usually not shouting. We can finally hear them. You can usually add power to your presence by adding volume. This is especially important when making a point in a meeting or giving a formal presentation. Another consideration is the giggle. Some women have the habit of giggling at the end of their sentences. It's as if they are nervous, uncomfortable, or think the other person might not like what they are saying, so they giggle. Many women who giggle do not realize they have this negative mannerism, and research indicates that women who giggle lose power and come across as little girls. Learn your voice image by listening to yourself. Most voicemail systems will allow you to listen to your message before you send it. Take advantage of this option. If you do not like what you hear, redo the message. The last nonverbal gesture I'm going to discuss is your handshake. A woman once told me that one of the reasons her boss hired her was because of her professional conduct. He commented specifically that she shook hands with him both at the beginning of the interview and at the end. You need to shake hands appropriately. This is step 7. If you don't, you may not be taken seriously. And some women were never taught to shake hands or how to do it correctly. As a result, women complain that men give them the limp handshake. But men also complain that women give them the limp handshake. Both men and women need to shake hands correctly. There are 3 simple keys to follow so your handshake sends the right message. First, say your name and extend your hand at a slight angle with your thumb up. Next, touch thumb joint to thumb joint. Put your thumb down and wrap your fingers around the other person's palm. And finally, make it firm, but not bone crushing. 2 to 3 pumps is enough. Many women assume they already use this technique, but when tested, they are surprised they aren't. Also, women need to stand when shaking hands. It's easy to be ignored when others stand and you don't. When I introduce myself to the participants in my seminars, approximately 75% of the men stand to shake my hand, but only 30 to 35% of the women do. Women need to remember to stand. Finally, make eye contact when you shake hands. And speaking of eye contact, you want to look people in the eye when you speak to them. You do not want to stare. You can occasionally look away. Before we discuss the final step, there is another element of executive presence that I would like to briefly discuss, and that is your ability to connect with others. What we just talked about, shaking hands correctly, is one part of connecting. Another is greeting and acknowledging others. And what I mean by this is simply to remember to say hello, good morning, or good night as you encounter people during your day. Research found that employees judge the effectiveness of their managers on whether they greet and acknowledge them. And you don't need to know someone to say hello to that person. The person who you greet on the way to the meeting may be the person sitting next to you at the meeting, and you have already established minor rapport. And having that rapport can help you achieve your goals. People think that they do greet others, but I challenge you to monitor yourself over the next few weeks and really find out if you do. Now let's discuss the last step, step 8, which is to tune in and realize how you use language to convey your image. I cannot stress enough how many women I have met over the years at all management levels who say they do not use self-discounting language. They do. They often don't realize it. What is self-discounting language? It is adding words to your sentences, words like kinda, sorta, actually, maybe, perhaps, that do not need to be there. They take away from your power. A telephone representative was trying to sell her phone services and said that her service is kinda nice. That left me wondering, is it or isn't it? Consider the difference between, I kinda thought that perhaps this may be helpful to you, or I believe this will be helpful to you. That's a big difference. Self-discounting language also involves using the phrase, I don't know, at the end of your statement. Women in my seminars will make a point, make it beautifully, and then end with, I don't know, or, oh, I don't know, what do you think? All levels of women can do this. An experienced physician said that she found herself talking to her interns, explaining a procedure, and then ending her comments with, oh, gee, what do I know? Saying, I don't know, or what do I know, expresses lack of confidence. Why do that? Another way women verbally discount themselves is to negate compliments. They respond with, it was nothing, or it's just my job. This self-discounting language can have negative ramifications for your work. A manager always discounted her boss's praise by saying, oh, it was no big deal. She didn't realize that she was doing it until he said to her, I am no longer giving you compliments on your work. You do not know how to accept them. When you respond to a compliment, you can simply say thank you and shut your mouth. Women also have the tendency to overuse the phrase, I'm sorry. I am not talking about genuine apologies. If you trip someone, spill something, express sympathy, say, I'm sorry. What I am talking about is the tendency for women to apologize for all sorts of negative things that are not their responsibility, and by doing so, put themselves down. One woman said, oh, it's raining out there? I'm sorry, as if it was her fault. We all have our issues to work on, and this was one of mine. I am an I'm sorry person. My friends used to say that on my gravestone, they will put, I'm sorry, I can't apologize. My challenge was to become conscious of this behavior and make a deliberate effort to change it in a positive manner. What is your challenge? What do you need to work on? I've already mentioned listening to your voicemail messages as a way to get feedback on your voice. You can also use this exercise to help you with your word choice. Keep a running list of the words you want to eliminate. Put a tick mark next to each word every time you hear it. Over time, you will gain control of your words. Now that you know the 8 steps to take to establish an executive presence, here is one final piece of advice. Never stop working on your professional image. Reassess these 8 steps periodically as you progress in your career. Readjust your appearance when necessary. The truth is, a powerful executive presence does not guarantee executive power, but it is an essential ingredient to your success. And I wish you well on that journey. Thank you.
Executive Presence, 8 steps you need to ensure that you will be taken seriously at work, is one of the many learning tools offered by Barbara Pachter and her company, Pachter & Associates. This recording complements many of Barbara's books, including When the Little Things Count and They Always Count, and New Rules at Work. For more information on obtaining any of these learning tools, or finding out about other products and training/coaching programs offered by Pachter & Associates, please look on the web at www.pachter.com, call 856-751-6141, or email bpachter@pachter.com.